This is Fire Through Spirit with Corby Mittline. Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Corby Mittline.
Welcome to Fire Through Spirit. I'm Corby Mittline. And if you tuned in saying, wait, wasn't it Empower Readings? Well, yes, it was, but it's not. We have revamped the show so that I have more of an opportunity to have dialogue and discussion and discovery with some of the most amazing people on the planet. We'll do readings, but they're going to be the occasional dessert, not the main course. Now, tonight, I've got, frankly, it's a treat for me. As most of you know, I have been reading since Moses was in nappies. In 1973, I got my first deck, the James Bond 007 tarot deck from Spencer Gifts. And I went through that, and then I went to the Swiss JJ, and then I went to the Aquarian, and then I went to one called the Morgan Greer. If you don't know which decks these are, don't worry about it. Just assume that I didn't change much. So for about, 20 years, 25, I read with this one specific deck. It was easy. It was easy for the rookie to understand, and I got really comfortable, like a pair of old loafers. Then in June, when I was in York, Pennsylvania, visiting my good buddies Bob Hall and Bill Trivett and doing a weekend's worth of workshops and readings at their shop, New Visions, Bill said, "You must see this deck." And he put a deck of tarot in my hand, and I literally just fell in love. And this was the Tarot Illuminati. And I am giddy to have Eric C. Dunn, the author, with us tonight to give you a little flavor. I'm not going to tell you the story of the cards. That's Eric's to tell. He's traveled extensively abroad and actually lived for some years in the Middle East, a part of the world he still considers quite magical. He has retraced the footsteps of legendary kings and queens, ridden camels across the dunes of Persia, and galloped steeds through fields of gold. His diverse life experiences are matched only by his opulent imagination, both of which are apparent in his creation of a cast of rich characters and fantastical realms. He is a classically trained artist under the tutelage of his parents, who are both skilled artisans in their own right. He has chosen digital as his medium, and his love of costume designs and his roots in theater are on every single card in the deck. Eric, I am so delighted to have you with us. Welcome to Fire Through Spirit.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm honored, to say the least.
Now, let's, for folks out there who don't know, let's trace back how tarot first introduced itself to you and said, "Hello, I want to play."
Oh, my God. Well, we're going back about 26 years now. I was considerably younger and more nimble, and I wandered into this teeny tiny New Age metaphysical bookstore on kind of a kitschy street in downtown York, Pennsylvania, all those years ago, and immediately met the owner, a friend of yours and mine, Bill Trivett, I was going through kind of a dark time in my life, and Bill became a fast and famous friend, and he introduced me to tarot, and I was hooked. I was hooked immediately, fascinated with the art of tarot and the fact that there were so many decks out there. Yeah, just hooked immediately. So that's where it really all began. And with Bill's encouragement, I read a lot, and he introduced me to the Rider-Waite-Smith first. Thought that was a really logical place to start, and all these years later, I have to agree. It just took off from there, and yeah, that was 26 years ago, and I'm forever grateful to Bill for that.
When did the tarot muse start whispering in your ear, you know what we mean and you should put us on paper?
Almost immediately. And I think it would be hard for any artist to fall in love with tarot, not just as a divinatory tool, but as a form of art. I think it'd be hard for any artist to fall in love with tarot the way I did and not immediately start thinking, you will one day create a deck of your own. I think, very, very, very early on that one day I would tackle this very daunting task and accomplish it. It just took me 26 years or 20 years now, I guess, before I was actually ready or found myself in a position that allowed me to pursue it from beginning to end. Over those years, Bill and I discussed this many, many times, my creating a deck, and he would bounce ideas off me and I would bounce sketches off him. And then I would disappear for sometimes months, sometimes years, move to the other side of the country or wherever. But we would always come back together, and whether it had been months or weeks or years, we would sit down together, and it was as if we had spoken the day before, and we would immediately come back to this idea that I was destined to create my own deck. And finally, I found myself in a position, as I said, about 6 years ago, I guess now, where the business of living was no longer getting in the way of my pursuing this. In fact, my situation lended itself beautifully to affording me the time and the studio space and the knowledge after all of those years to feel comfortable actually starting this deck and seeing it through to the end.
Now, did the deck tell you what it wanted to be and you followed, or did you have an idea about the deck and kind of on the astral put out the job description and the pictures showed up? Because that's two very different ways of approaching it.
Right. The concept for the deck, or the flavor, I guess you could say, that the deck was going to take, morphed slightly over the year. Maybe that's not the right way to put it. Morphed is probably not the right way to say it. Over the years, it matured. From my initial sketches, some of which I still have going back that far, and I've gone back and looked at them, and I've noticed that the concept didn't change as much as it matured, and I think it needed to ferment in me for as long a period of time as it did for it to actually materialize in the Illuminati the way it has. All of the elements that you find in the Illuminati are great loves of mine and things that have always been of great interest and great love for me in terms of the kind of Baroque illustration and the costume design, the elaborate costuming, and the cultures that I've been exposed to. So all of those things were always there. I think they just needed to mature and, as I said, ferment to the point where it was ripe and ready to come exploding out of me. Now, if I may, Corby, it's important for me to preface that by saying that this deck didn't start out with the intent of publication and being released to the public. This was a really personal journey for me. And it was only after I started to post some of the artwork in my online DeviantArt gallery that people had noticed it and started coming back to me and saying, oh my gosh, I hope you're planning on publishing this. You must publish this. You must release this to the public. But that's not the way it started out. It really started out as my dream deck, the deck that was the end-all, be-all for me, you know, to read up with on a personal level.
The thing that I love that you've done with it specifically, there are a couple of things, but the first thing that I noticed and reveled in is the depth and nuance in the faces. As most of my listeners know, I was raised on ElfQuest, and I got to literally stand at the shoulder of Wendy Pini and watch her make magic. Now, this was back originally on the days when it was on Bristol board. It was ink. Right. It was pencils.
Right.
And so I learned to look at the layering, the tilt of the head, the shape of the eye, the mobility of the mouth. And Wendy also has a brilliant cinematic feel. When you look at a page of panels, it's like you're looking at a film. The thing that I saw in your faces, not only is the artwork gorgeous and the costuming gorgeous, but I found myself literally studying the faces. What's behind it? What are they thinking? What would they say? Which is very different from a lot of the other decks. If they're kind of cartoony fantasy like Robin Wood, you can't take them. I mean, they're beautiful and they work, but you can't take them seriously. And a deck like the Morgan Greer, it's representational, but it's not a real person on there. Mm-hmm. With yours, for instance, I'm looking at the King of Cups, and he sits there in this gorgeous mound of blue satin and brocade, and he looks at you from under his eyebrows, and his hands are steepled, and it's almost like he's waiting for you. All right, what are you going to explain to me this time?
All right.
Whereas when you go with the Queen of Wands, we talked about that. She's just looking at you like, I dare you. Right. It's very much Faye Dunaway, Milady de Winter in Three Musketeers, the 74 mm-hmm. version. You've got the King of Wands, Othello the Moor, thinking, looking off to the side. Obviously, it's almost like, can I really bother this guy reading the card? He's busy. You mm-hmm. don't get feelings like this from any of the other decks out there. Part of my question, how did you decide, number one, on which races or nationalities for the suits, because they're four very different?
Okay.
And did you use any facial models, or are these the faces that talk to you in your mind and heart when you were creating?
Okay, let's address the faces first. And, mm-hmm. you know, the cards started out very much as you mentioned, with the Bristol board. They started out as thumbnail sketches, freehand with pencil, until I felt I was developing a character that way that I was comfortable with and felt comfortable moving forward. And then I would move into the digital medium begin fabricating the character there. But I'll tell you, the first aspect of every card, court cards in particular, the first issue I addressed was the face and the expression and what it was conveying, and did this individual emote the feel and the look and the thought process that I believed would be working behind their eyes, you know? So yeah, the face was by far the most important. Everything else came after that. In terms of how I accomplished them, as I said, I do work digitally. So the artwork is a compilation of a lot of different techniques. Some of it's photo manipulation. Some of it is freehand painting and sketching and that sort of thing, as well as various lighting tools and things like that. But in terms of the actual characters, often I would be inspired by a face from history or a face we're familiar with in the media. And on rare occasion, you'll find faces in the deck that are examples of people who've been very important in my own personal life. That's how they began.
Give me examples. Look, for one thing, Queen of Swords, she is Elizabeth. clearly.
Absolutely, absolutely. She had to be.
I'm lusting for her gown, can I tell you?
Say that again?
I'm lusting for her gown, I have to tell you.
Yeah.
It is just such...
She was the first card, by the way. She was the very first card on that I did on this deck. And it's funny, Bill reminded me of this not too long ago, at his last Friday Night Forum when I was chatting with him, but every time I started a new concept on a deck or started new illustrations for a deck, I always started with the Queen of Swords. Don't ask me why. I don't know. It just seemed that's where Spirit was telling me to go. But my Queen of Swords had to be modeled after Elizabeth. She is by far one of the most profound female characters in history. I've read everything there is to read on her, I think, and just been fascinated with her for as long as I can remember. But it also made sense in that swords being air, therefore the breath and the spoken word, Elizabeth spoke fluently every commonly spoken tongue in the Europe of her day, as well as fluent in Greek and Latin. Her linguistic skills were superior to most of the very well-educated men she encountered, and her skills of oration and debate and getting thoughts and ideas across in a very eloquent way, or she's infamous for these things. So it made perfect sense that she would be my Queen of Swords, you know. Interestingly, the Princess of Swords, the model and the inspiration for the Princess of Swords is actually the author of the companion book, Kim Huggins.
Really?
Yeah, and that too seemed a very logical choice. It was the perfect place to honor her within the deck, and that's what that was about. Not for lack of being able to create someone from scratch, but because it was a way of paying homage to what she had contributed to the deck. So that's when I say, well, there are a select few people who've been very meaningful in my life that are actually portrayed in the deck. She's one of them as the princess. But the whole Elizabethan theme in the swords, I view that time period as being producing some of the most brilliant orators and people in command of language. Shakespeare, for God's sake, hails from that same time period. What a wordsmith and what a command for language. So it seemed like a really appropriate choice for that particular suit.
Let's take a look at the others. So,
okay.
Yes, the red-haired Elizabethans, of course, who's the King of Swords? It's Henry VIII.
Oh, absolutely.
Beautifully rendered. Can there be any other? But you've got wands, cups, and pentacles that are, again, absolutely different, totally different parts of the world. How did you decide who was going to be what?
It, I trusted my gut, as well as having practical and direct exposure to these cultures that I've illustrated. I lived in Persia for a number of years, what is now Iran. I lived there for a number of years in my adolescence, and so I was very familiar with the culture, and I always found it quite mystical and fascinating. And wands rather representing fire, you know. And you're a history connoisseur, so you're probably aware of this. But during the first Persian Empire, and the second and the third, actually, long before Islam ever entered the picture, their religious leaders were magi, wise men, mystics, seers, and their most sacred rituals all involved fire as a very sacred element to them. So it seemed a very logical culture to represent wands for me, as well as a culture that I was quite familiar with in terms of the costumery and that sort of thing. So that seemed logical. Pentacles are Asian in influence, and I think I've kind of melted a lot of Asian cultures together in the illustration. There's some Japanese influence in the kimono style and some Chinese, imperial Chinese influence there as well. But pentacles being the earthbound suit, I thought in terms of the ancient Chinese empire and how the first emperor had taken all of these small warlord-ruled fiefs and kingdoms and embraced them all and pulled them under one fold and created this nation, this empire that covered huge and vast amounts of geographical territory, as well as being very wealthy in its resources, both natural and art and precious metals and the forging of it and things like that. These were all elements that played into that choice as well, in addition to their reverence and respect for family and ancestors. Those who've gone before and those who are coming after plays into a very large part of their culture. And that's an important part of the suit of pentacles in my interpretation anyway as well. So that made sense. And then I think the only suit that doesn't draw upon an actual culture from history is the suit of cups, cups being emotion. I felt as though I needed to create a race that exuded unconditional love and emotion. I'm not aware of a race or a culture on the planet that those principles have sustained the entire race and culture. So I needed to create one of my own, and it kind of took on a very elven feel and look, but I wanted it to emote love and emotion and that sort of thing. So I kind of created that race. But those are the reasons I made the choices that I made. It seemed to happen very organically and very instinctively. I would start moving in that direction, and it made sense as to why I was moving in that direction, and then I would take it and run with it and expand upon it. Not to mention, all of these cultures really lended themselves to amazing, elaborate costumery.
I'll never argue that.
Yeah,
it's very interesting. I'm going back and forth. All right, cups, Russian, Scandinavian, not Byzantine. So now I know the whole white knight spiel that I was getting is from the elven. All right,
right.
We've got just 3 minutes before break. I do want to tell people we are still taking calls, not about readings, but if you have questions for Eric about the creative process or tarot itself, or you want to just join into the discussion if you own the Tarot Illuminati, absolutely, that's great. The number is, as always, 248-809-3475. That's 248-809-3475. Eric, if they want to get a hold of one of these decks, where are they going to find it?
Oh, my gosh. Lots of places, although I would first and foremost encourage you to support your local brick and mortar. You know, we have wonderful resources online in terms of purchasing things like this, like Amazon, and even the websites of my publisher and my distributor, which is my publisher being Lo Scarabio in Italy and the publisher or the distributor in North America being Llewellyn. So there are wonderful resources for picking up the deck online. I can't even begin to mention them all, but I would really encourage you, if you have the option, to attempt to purchase it through your local brick and mortar, because I think with this age of internet, these brick and mortar stores, which have been our mainstay and our livelihood for so many years, are feeling the pinch in this age of the internet. So New Visions Bookstore, which is the home of the Illuminati, because that's where, you know, my whole experience began, is willing to ship anywhere domestically. And they always have access to the deck, which can't be said for all the shops, but Bill and Bob have that magic, you know.
All right, we'll be sure to give that address when we're on the other side. We're just going to take a minute for a break, and then I'm going to come back with Eric and his magnificent Tarot Illuminati, and I'm going to keep peppering him with questions. Why don't you join me?
Are you there?
You're listening to Empower Radio. For a complete archive of Fire Through Spirit, visit empowerradio.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast through iTunes and Stitcher Radio. More Fire Through Spirit with Corby Midline next on Empower Radio.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called inventnow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the Lost Cat Magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the inventnow.org website too. But just remember one thing, don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg.
Ha-ha, I win. Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl. What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold.
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master? Well, stop dreaming and start shopping with the Karate Glove.
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the Karate Glove, and I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-yah!
The Karate Glove chops through anything. Just put it on and instantly chop through wood. Hi-hi! Concrete.
Hi-yah!
Brick walls.
Hi-yah!
Trees.
Hi-yah!
Small cars. It can even chop through these 8 guitars. It chops things.
If I can invent a karate glove, just imagine what you can do. Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It's hi-ya time!
This is Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Now, back to Fire Through Spirit with Corby Midline.
Welcome back. We are spending a fascinating hour with Eric C. Dunn, who is the illuminator, I can't just say artist, of the Tarot Illuminati, which is a fabulous, staggeringly beautiful new tarot deck that is taking the tarot world by storm. I know, it sounds like a cliche, guys, but you gotta believe me, it really does. Eric, the thing that I want to talk about next is...
Could I interject one thing before we move on about the whole cultural diversity in the deck?
Yeah.
I wanted to interject that it was really important to me to kind of attempt to represent the global phenomenon that tarot has taken on, that it's no longer, you know, a Western system of divination, that it's been embraced by people from all over the world and all different cultures. And I thought it was really important that no matter who you were and where you were from, you found something in this deck that you could identify with and say, oh, gosh, I've been included. So that I wanted to interject that. I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize, because that is true. If you look at virtually every other deck out there, it is either a very homogenous, everybody looks the same, everybody's from the same fantasy neighborhood, or it is a culture that may not lend itself to tarot. You know, the First Nations people, some say Native American, they don't use tarot, but you've got Native American. That, to me, is like tuna fudge ripple ice cream. It doesn't quite go. So the way you've done your deck is respectful, opens up like the thousand-petaled lotus. It's not just one petal. It's thousands. It's layers. It's nuanced. And, yes, it is magnificently inclusive. I will absolutely give you an amen on that one.
Thank you.
What I wanted to talk about is, because you went with the diversity that you have, you have truly enriched the meanings of the deck. Now, you know, if I ever meet Kim, is it Huggins? Am I pronouncing
Huggins.
It right?
Yeah.
Huggins. Okay. If I ever meet her, I'm going to have to give her 2 dozen roses, a six-pack of beer, and an apology. But I'm one of the ones that when I get a deck, I don't read the book until I am very familiar with the deck, and it has told me how it wants me to read it.
Okay.
Now, it could be that when you've read as long as I have, you can trust that.
Right.
If this is a new deck, then yes, books are absolutely vital. But what I noticed, there is a very typical card. It is the Five of Wands. The Five of Wands traditionally just shows either a bunch of people arguing, or in the Morgan Greer, it is just five hands and five wands, and it's the symbol. And it talks about competition. It talks about arguing. But because there are no faces, it's very abstract. The thing that you did with the Five of Wands, which I loved, number one, it is in the suit of the Arabian Peninsula. So you've got gorgeous swirling turbans, tunics, trousers, capes. And while they're all swinging, it's not clubs. It's these gorgeous staves with stylized fire at the end. And so all of a sudden I said, it's not just argument. It is the one, it's a brainstorm card.
Oh,
it is the magnificent swirl.
Precisely. Precisely. It's a sparring of concepts and ideas. Not a battle. Do you know what I mean?
That is, yes, and that is a meaning I have never gotten from any other deck. This is what I mean when I say that the deck opens up the interpretation, even for those of us that have been reading since, you know, Moses was in Abbeys. It really does. Because you have infused it with the life of the characters, the different cultures, and each picture is literally like an Arthur Rackham illustration. So it's not just, okay, the Prince of Cups. Let's take a look at him. He's up on the top of the deck.
Well, but
the Prince of Cups, it's usually, you know, the knight.
That card in particular, the Five of Wands. My take on that card has always been, this is not a beatdown. This is not a battle. This is, there's no bloodshed here. This is a real life sparring of ideas, and through an honest sparring of ideas and interjection of various ideas, the cream of the crop rises to the top. You know? That's how I've always taken that card and what I wanted to represent there.
And this is a meaning that you may see it buried in a Mary Greer when you're learning how to read it, but it's not what you get intrinsically within the card. Now, that's why this deck has so much in it, whether you are a novice or whether you are literally a tarot master. Like, there are some that have that rank from the Tarot Certification Board of America. So let me ask you this. Were there any cards in the deck where you
saw... I didn't realize there was such a thing, Corby.
The Tarot
Certification Board of America?
Swear to God, on my pinky, there is one.
I didn't know. I didn't know. I learned something new every time.
Yes, you can be a tarot apprentice to all the way up. When you are a certified tarot master, it is not only that you can read the cards. I mean, I am a certified professional tarot reader because I don't really want to teach. But I went through a 3-hour oral exam with the executive director. It's not do you know the cards and do you know what they mean upside down. It's how do you help your client reword a question so he finds out what he really wants to know if he doesn't know how. For instance, if somebody said, is Mr. Right? No, you want to know about the relationship, so you show them that. You learn how to devise your own spreads. You learn how to literally read instantly on the fly and trust what you know. To become a master... You review decks and you teach, et cetera, et cetera. One of my dear friends, Anita Merritt, Crystal Wind, she's a tarot master. I believe Robert Moyer is a certified tarot master down in Philly. It is a real ranking because, and I think it's necessary, tarot cards are the thing that just about anybody can grab.
Mm-hmm.
And there are too many people who... they just read the book, they memorize the one book, and then they flip the cards.
Right.
One of the things that I love is if you ask me, for instance, about your business, I'm not going to flip a few cards and say, wait until January and fire the blonde. You're going to get an in-depth reading of you, the energy around the business, the marketing, the clients, the competition, your staff, your finances. And with a deck like yours, there is so much more that I can give them. Let's say that the Five of Wands that we're talking about came up in the marketing card.
Okay.
Instead of just saying, you know, you should tell somebody this or that, I'd say you need to brainstorm.
Mm-hmm.
You need to realize there are going to be all kinds of ideas. When you do your marketing plan, you may want to literally do a rolling newspaper ads or rolling commercials. You may want to give it a slightly exotic flair, et cetera, which I would not have done with any other deck.
Oh, brilliant.
So this deck requires you as a reader to think and to feel, not go by rote. And that is what keeps you superb at your craft. Anybody who just sits back on their, you know, their haunches and says, well, I know how to do this. I've read it this way for years. I can always do this. They will not grow.
Mm-hmm.
Their reading style will not reflect how the world changes. And they may become so enamored of X meaning that when somebody comes along for whom that meaning really isn't right, they don't know how to look in the card, literally ask the card, what else do I need to see the way yours do? You understand what I'm saying about...
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely, and I agree with you 100%. And that's how the deck was created. You know, a lot of it was intuition and listening to spirit and saying, okay, this is how I can best convey my feeling and my intuition about this card. I need to tell this story, but I need to tell it in a way that it can be deciphered by those who are willing to listen, you know?
Mm-hmm. So
now
the first,
admittedly, there are very, very firm roots in Rider-Waite-Smith. and the symbolism. That's where I began, and I wasn't trying to. And I've actually been criticized for that. I've heard it called a Rider-Waite clone, a Rider-Waite knockoff. The things that I thought were very derogatory in some situations, perhaps in others, it was just their way of expressing that it's firmly rooted in the Rider-Waite system. But I wasn't trying to reinvent the wheel. I was attempting to honor the revered ancestor that I started with, and put myself into it, my own stamp onto it. Not improve upon it, but expand upon it, and lend my voice to it, and honor what I view as a revered ancestor. At the same time, a wonderful woman from New York described it as it's been pulled from the same DNA pool as the Rider-Waite Smith, and I found that a very flattering way of saying, you know, that there's obviously a lot of Rider-Waite influence here, and consequently, folks like Bill Trivet have been able to easily transition. He who's read with Rider-Waite for 30 plus years has found it incredibly easy to transition to the Illuminati as a result of staying true to that foundation that I started with. So did that make sense?
It made brilliant sense. And I would compare what you've done with this deck vis-a-vis the Rider-Waite. Let's look at Broadway. You've got two Shakespeare plays. You've got Romeo and Juliet, mm-hmm. and you've got Two Gentlemen of Verona. Mm-hmm. And you'd think, well, there they are. No new interpretation. Mm-hmm. Would you call West Side Story a clone of Romeo and Juliet, and the rock version, Two Gentlemen of Verona, a clone of Shakespeare's original?
Absolutely not.
But that is the whole thing. There is an interpretation of the time.
Right.
Rider-Waite, that was what? Terribly late 19th, very early 20th century?
1910. In publication since 1910.
Okay. Okay, so you're talking right the first third of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
The world was different. How you could create art was
mm-hmm.
different. How
Absolutely.
People viewed civilization was different.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you may be using the same symbology, the same, think of it like a sculpture, the same wire on, you know, as the skeleton
right.
of your sculpture.
Right.
What is on top of it is different. West Side Story could not have been conceived of in 1910, let alone Shakespeare's time. Same thing with the rock version of Two Gentlemen of Verona.
Mm-hmm.
It was for the time.
Right.
And with everyone so vitally aware of fantasy, science fiction, graphic novels,
mm-hmm.
with people more aware of how to tell stories with symbology, then your deck, to me, is a logical outgrowth.
Okay.
It is not stealing. It is not a clone. I'm sorry. I think anyone who says that is short-sighted. I think the DNA thing was on target.
Yeah. A brilliant way to convey it. And, you know, the other thing, while we're in this topic of the 21st century and tarot, mm-hmm. is, you know, there are a select few people out there, maybe more than a select few, I don't know, people, a select few who've voiced it, that they have a real aversion to the digital medium. And I say to that, you know, the digital medium is no different than any other medium. There was a time when acrylic paints were considered cheating by those who worked in nothing but oils, you know, because it was new. It was a new medium, and it didn't hold the same value or the same artistic integrity that the older mediums did. I feel the same way about digital. You know, if you don't have a strong foundation in color theory and composition and anatomy and lighting, light and shadow, and all of these things, if you don't have a firm foundation in those, it's no easier to produce a beautiful piece of artwork in the digital medium than it is in one of the more traditional mediums. So I think that people with this aversion towards this method of creating artwork need to reexamine what actually goes into it and how involved and intricate and time-intensive a process it is.
I've actually watched, again, this is an argument that a lot of the ElfQuest fans had, because Wendy, of course, is digital. She works with a Cintiq. Mm-hmm. And when I watched her choose shading, color, light, dark, it is absolutely as time-consuming, as heart-consuming, as mind-challenging as having a bunch of wash color and a Bristol board and inks. But they think, I mean, my thing is, you think it's so easy? Here, you sit down at the
right,
Cintiq. You draw an elf. You draw a tarot card. Tell me it's cheating, kids.
No.
So now, you know, this is probably the only question I've asked you that's going to be asked by every single radio thing you've done. Where do you want the deck to go from here? What's your vision?
Oh, my God. You know, I had really hoped that she would be born with legs, and instead she was born with wings, and she's taken off. The global response to this has so far exceeded anything I could have hoped for in my wildest dreams. I'm absolutely blown away and humbled, so humbled by the reception that my work has received internationally. It's just mind-boggling. Where do I want to see it go? I want to see it continue to touch as many people with the same resounding voice that it speaks to me every time I pick it up. I have some new projects that are coming out of the deck. I've just recently started collaborating on an Android app using the Tarot Illuminati. Yeah, and I'm a very low tech guy living in a high tech world. I prefer the page turning of the book and the smell of the parchment and the feel of a book in my hand. But I understand that in this day and age, and the speed at which we move, this is a whole nother genre of tarot aficionados and lovers that are going to use this digital medium. So I've recently started an Android app, the designing of an Android app using the deck. I'm considering releasing poster size prints of individual cards for those who are interested. But I really just hope it touches as many people and affects them as profoundly as it's affected me. You know, it's been a very humbling experience, and I'm so very grateful to so many
now,
people.
Now I've heard. Yes. Well, you got fans.
Well, it takes a village, you know. Nobody pulls this off on his own. You know, there's Kim Huggins, the amazing author. There's Bill Trivett, who started planting the seed 26 years ago. There's Ricardo at Los Garabio, who respected my artistic vision and gave me the final say on everything from the beginning right through the production process right to its release. There's Marcus Katz, who has promoted the Pamela Steele of Steel Wizard, who encouraged me to actually publish and release to the public, and got me introduced me to social media and got me using it to get the word out. So, you know, it takes a village, and I'm so very grateful that I've encountered these magnificent people. And you now look at what the Tarot Illuminati's made it possible for me to meet and have this conversation with you. Remarkable. You know, this deck has done more for me as an individual and from a growth perspective than I ever did by creating it and putting it out there. It really has.
Now, I hear that there's a whisper that there's going to be another deck. Are you allowed to talk about that now, or is that
it's been gnawing at me. It's in my brain. It's in my body. It's racking me. There's another deck in here. I've begun collaborating with Kim Huggins again on a follow-up deck. I call it a sister deck for lack of a better way to describe it. But it's in the very, very early conceptual stages. I have some wonderful ideas, and they're manifesting more all of the time. But it's going to be, like I said, it's in the very early stages, but yeah, you can definitely anticipate, another deck to follow. And hopefully I don't want to say improve upon this one, but, I guess that is what I hope, that I manage to create something that speaks even louder than this deck.
If we don't grow and change, we fade, we die. So it's not that you love this deck any less. It's that the next deck will be different. That's
right. Right. And it's going to have, it's going to have Eric Dunn's recognizable over the top texturized and vibrantly colored artwork and images. I mean, that's who I am. And I'm not going to reinvent the wheel, but I would like to find some very interesting and fresh ways to present the same time honored messages that and stories that the cards tell, but I'd like to find a fresh way to present that. So that's what I'm going to be working on here in the near future.
I could spend hours talking to you about this, but we have about 3 minutes.
Oh no!
So I know it was great. So
it flies
very quickly. Where are they going to find you online? Do you have a website?
Right now, my Facebook page, and I have both pages set up exclusively under Tarot Illuminati, and then there's my personal page under Eric C. Dunn. And that's my only web presence right now, but anything pertaining to the deck, you'll find there. Now, I do have a friend who is presently working on a website for me, but I don't anticipate that being up and running in the very near future. So for the time being, you can find me at my Facebook pages, and I would encourage, if I may, Corby, I would really like to pay it forward in a sense. When I started this whole thing and it started to gain a web presence, I got some really horrific feedback, some very hurtful comments and criticisms online. I wasn't quite sure how to take it on the chin at that point because this was such a personal project for me. So I would kind of like to pay it forward and put myself out there for new artists who are looking to get published or looking to pick my brain on how to go about finding the perfect publisher, because they're all very different, or looking for advice or just a sounding board. I'd like to pay it forward by offering myself to other artists or writers or whatever who are interested, because I know that they're going to experience the same thing, and I would like for people to be able to realize that I too was attempted to, a couple people attempted to put their boot on my throat in the very, very beginning. And had I not continued moving forward, you wouldn't have the Tarot Illuminati in front of you today. So I'm hoping that my story can kind of help other artists realize that, you know, trust your gut, listen to spirit, and pursue it to the bitter end, and with honesty, and you'll have a tremendous success. So I kind of wanted to throw that out there.
Okay, and that brings us right to the end. Thank you so much, Eric. You can find Eric and me this weekend at the Celebration of Life Expo in New York, Pennsylvania. Next week, it's going to be Corby Solo talking about learning from mistakes. See you then on Fire Through Spirit.